when looking at your partner's travel or your travel, it's not just the travel, it's everything that's going on top of it that also has an importance. Welcome to Holding the Fort Abroad, the podcast about frequent business travel and working away from home. My name is Rhoda Bangata, and today I'm going to be telling my story in chronological order. I've told it on podcasts, I've said bits and pieces in my book, Holding the Fort Abroad, but today I'm going to give you a more linear progression and draw out the lessons I've learned that will hopefully be an encouragement for you and some useful tips and the books that have been instrumental in my journey. It's interesting because when I was writing down the different stories that I wanted to share with you and then what the lessons learned were during those periods, the different periods in my life, I realized when I put it to one side and then I came back to it and I realized I'd missed out some elements, like that he was, you know, traveling irregular patterns, or I even missed out a whole chunk when he was gone Monday to Friday. So it was just an interesting thing. I think many of us do that. We forget all the different elements that we deal with. Let me go back to when I met my husband, Olivier. It was 2004. I was working in England and he was actually in Congo. We corresponded by email first, and then because we had a mutual colleague, I was looking for some volunteers to work on a project that I was coordinating, and he had worked as a volunteer before for this organization. And so someone said to me, write to him. So I wrote to him saying, hi, my name's Rhoda, and telling him all about the project. And he wrote back and he was like, oh, you know, I don't have a lot of time right now, but let's stay in touch. And we ended up exchanging emails. He knew a lot of people that I knew. He knew from my organization. He knew my boss. I was interested in inductions as well in his organization. And so we talked about that. Basically, we just hit it off. This is a long story of how we met. It's just a bit unusual. And we ended up having a blind date in Geneva Airport because he had disabled his attachment. So he didn't know what I looked like. I did know what he looked like. Anyway, we met, we hit it off pretty quickly and started dating. By that time, he was on his way to another posting in another country, and we dated for a little bit long distance. And when we met, he was like, I'm probably going to be working in the field for a long time. He was working for a big humanitarian organization, and he said it's quite hard to find a position in headquarters. And I was like, it's fine, no worries, you know, I'm settled here, let's just see what comes. Within, I don't know, 6 months, he had been called to Geneva, asked to join headquarters. Very soon after that, he asked me to marry him. And within a year, we were married and I moved to Geneva. So what I wanted to say was that that year, we were probably in the same country in all, if you put all the days we were in the same, you know, place, probably 3 months, I reckon. A lot of our getting to know each other was through writing emails. We read a couple of books at the same time and exchanged our opinions. And I think that really created a strong bond. I didn't realize the extent of what I was getting myself into. Even though we started with a long distance relationship, I don't think I realized, oh, this is something, a pattern that may be repeating itself in our relationship. I moved to Geneva. We thought we would be there about a year. It turns out we stayed 6 years. Later on, I realized that I was being a love pat. I don't know if you've heard that word before, but a love pat is someone who moves to their partner's country for love. And I thought we were both expats in a way, but that was a misconception on my part. He was moving back to his country, and I was the one who was adapting. Not only were we newlyweds, we were getting used to living in the same place together, because we'd never been really living in the same place. Culturally, we had very big differences. I was looking for a new job, realizing that my qualifications weren't really going to fit into the Swiss system. Those were quite difficult years, those early years. And he was traveling for his work. And he came back to me recently. I said, I didn't travel that frequently. And when I looked at the dates, because, you know, he went to his calendar, brought out all his dates. And I'm like, yes, but that date, I was ill. And that date, I'd just given birth. And that date, we just moved house. So I think when looking at your partner's travel or your travel, it's not just the travel. It's everything that's going on top of it that also has an importance. Those were very difficult years for me and for us. He was traveling to places that were dangerous. I always say, I jokingly say my prayer life went, you know, crazy. I started praying much, much more than I normally did. But I did struggle. And at one point, I remember I was in a car park. I tell this story in the book. I was in a car park of a supermarket. We had a newborn, our first child. And I just started crying and crying. He was in Darfur. And this elderly gentleman kind of knocked on the window. And he's like, are you okay? I'm like, oh, I'm going to be okay. I'm okay. But I decided to kind of go see a doctor. It's like, what's going on with me? Why can't I cope? You know, now looking back on it, I'm like, hello, what were you dealing with? Anyway, I remember going to the doctor, and the doctor's kind of asking me questions like, you know, how long have you been in this country? I think it was 2 years by then. Not even. And, you know, do you have family here? No. I was still getting to know his friends, and his parents had been hugely welcoming to me, but it was still a huge adjustment. It's not like having your own family around. And he was like, and so you've just given birth, and you've just stopped breastfeeding, and you've just moved house, and you've just gone back to work. And I'm like, yes. And he's like, don't you think that's a lot for one person? And pause. And it hit me, you know, that I just didn't realize how much I was dealing with. There are all these layers to an expat life. And that is the lesson learned from that period in my life. You may be dealing with illness. You may be dealing with aging parents. You may just have become a parent. You may have just gotten married or just gotten into a relationship. And you're moving countries. And that's important to take all those layers into account. So one of the exercises I do with my clients is to sit down and start making a list of all the different things, all the different layers that are in your life. During that time, towards, when was it, 2007, our oldest was born. And I started having problems with my eyes. I was working as the assistant of a coffee expert and a coffee consultant. I remember it was July. Olivier had just come back from Chad, and he had 40 degrees fever. He went straight to bed. And that weekend, I woke up and I couldn't see anything. Like, literally, it was foggy. And I couldn't see my hand in front of my face, and I freaked out. So he was in bed. We had a 9-month-old, and I couldn't drive, and I couldn't see anything. I was like, is it my glasses? I'm like, no, I'm not wearing glasses. Anyway, go to the ophthalmologist. She's like, right, you need to go see a specialist right now. But it's August, so I don't know if you're going to be able to see anybody. go to the hospital, the eye hospital in Lausanne, which is world famous. See a doctor, see an assistant doctor, and she's like, you need to see the specialist. She goes off, gets the specialist, he comes back, and he goes, you have something called Fuchs corneal dystrophy, which means that there's a layer of your cornea that's deteriorating, and that's why you're getting water accumulating in that layer of your cornea. So you're going to need a corneal transplant. And I'm like, well, I'm going to have a husband at home, and they can't figure out what he has. And he's like, it's okay, you can have an operation, a corneal transplant, and it should help. Anyway, long story short, for quite a few months, I couldn't go out because the light was bothering me so much. And he was in bed. A few months after that, maybe I can't remember the timeline exactly, but then I get a corneal transplant, and I cried when I got the call because I knew someone had died and had given me their cornea. I had the corneal operation. My life changed. I was able to go out again. But by that time, I'd stopped working. And I told my husband, like, I'm never going to stop working. I want to work. And he was fine with that. He was like, yeah, great. Let's both of us work. And it just got too much with the sickness and him traveling all the time. I'm like, I can't do it. That's it. So I stopped working. He got better. It turned out he got a virus from our child, but he got better eventually. After about 6 9 months, he was back on his feet and went back to work. 2010, we have a second baby. He gets a job in Bern, moves to foreign service. For 1 year, Monday to Friday, he traveled to Bern, which was an hour and a half away, and I stayed in Geneva in our apartment near Geneva to sell the apartment. That was also a busy time. I must say, maybe at that point, I'm happy I wasn't working. The children were little. We moved to Bern eventually after 1 year of him commuting with a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old. And we thought we'd be there forever. Turns out, after 12 months, my husband comes home and goes, there's an opportunity in New York. Shall we go? And being the adventurous person I am, I say, yes, let's do it. The next day, I'm like, what have I done? We have a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and we just moved house. Anyway, we pack up everything, move to New York. And this life has layers, and this life is unpredictable. Okay, those are the first 2 points. Move to New York, and those are years when I'm changing diapers, taking care of the boys. I volunteered a little bit in a homeless shelter. Life was busy. He was traveling a lot to different continents. It was a fun time. But during that time, I had a bit of an epiphany where I bought some strawberries one day. This is also in the book. I bought some beautiful strawberries, juicy, gorgeous. And I put three bowls on the table, one for my husband, one for my eldest, and one for our youngest. And I'm counting out the strawberries, making sure everybody has an equal amount of strawberries. And I'm looking at the bowls and I'm thinking, where's my bowl? And I realized in that moment that I had not counted myself in. I started wondering, how many times have I not counted myself in our life? How many times have I made sure that my husband and my kids were okay, and I didn't even check in with myself? That moment was a pivotal moment in my life. And from then on, I endeavored, and I really, every time something came up, I checked that I was including myself. There is absolutely no reason that I get no strawberries. 2016, we're heading back to Bern, which is the first time in my whole entire life that I went back to a country that I'd lived in and to the same apartment, which was very interesting. And he started commuting within Switzerland and Europe. I realized by then that I needed to start building something for myself. I think, I mean, it tied up to the strawberry story when I started to think, hey, what am I doing here? How can I include myself in this storyline? And one of the things I wanted to do was build something so that when the children were gone, and within 10 years at that point, they would be out of the house potentially. I was like, what have I built? What skills have I developed? What am I passionate about? Do I want to go back to what I was doing before, which was office management and HR? Or do I want to do something completely different? I found a life coach online, started being coached by her, and realized how intercultural my life was, because I'd grown up in France with parents from different nationalities. My dad was British, my mom was Middle Eastern. So you entered my home. It was a mixture of like a French salad for starter, a Middle Eastern dish for the main meal, and a British pudding. There was music from all over the world playing. We had people come through the house from all sorts of places. I grew up as a missionary kid, so I'm an MK. If you've looked at the work that's been done on third culture kids, it all began with missionary kids. And because missionary kids de facto grow up in a country that's not their parents' country. I realized then that I was very intercultural. That had a huge impact on my life. I started investigating and studying multicultural living, intercultural living, global mobility. The Culture Map by Erin Meyer was a book that really showed me that culture is not something that we can't understand. There are certain codes and keys on how people communicate. And yes, interculturalists are now saying, you know, it's not, culture isn't just per country. There's the family culture, generational cultures, socioeconomic cultures, interests cultures, professional cultures, even different regions in different country, in the same country can have wildly different cultures and ways of doing things. And a culture really is when people's values, beliefs, behaviors, when it goes beyond individual preferences and is group, is done by a group of people. So even if you're from the same country with your partner, because of you grew up in two different countries, you're basically from two different family cultures. So you will have differences in how you value and see things. Another thing the coaching did for me is that it really got me thinking about values and what was important for me and what I wanted to build for the future. That is what I love about coaching. It is said that therapy is archaeology and coaching is architecture. And where there is a place for therapy, for healing and going back over the past, coaching, you can really see improvement quickly as you start building and aligning things. It also helps with the interculturalness, because once you go back to values, you find yourself. At that time, I was trying different things. I had the option of finding full-time work outside of home. But I knew that we'd probably likely move again. And I'm like, really, do I want to work for 2 years at the university or for a big organization and then have to move again? I didn't really want to do that. One of my values is family. And I knew he was traveling. And I'm like, if I'm going to be on call, why am I going to add the element of having to stress about a job and being on call for my kids and raising my kids? Yeah, no. I taught some French. I did a TEFL training. I learned German. I was hesitating about going and doing more training about intercultural communication. Eventually, I trained as a coach as well during those years. 2019 happened. And my husband was offered a position in Kabul, which would mean geographically apart. And this is really the moment that kicked off a lot of basically my passion for supporting families who live this and my understanding of what it means. And really, I set off on a mission to find out if other families did it, if they did, how they made it work. what I found out was that, yes, tons of families do it. Yes, there's ways of making it work. There's common challenges. And another thing I realized is that really he'd been gone here, there, and everywhere for work over, you know, the 15 years, 16 years. No, by then, yeah, 15 years we'd been married. I was like, ah, so you want to go 8 weeks at a time? Fine. You know, what difference is it going to make, really? Well, there are differences. But, you know, that's for another episode. So he set off in September 2019 to Kabul. Me and the boys stayed in Switzerland. And I decided to launch into researching these families. One of the things I decided to do was to write a book about it. And I started interviewing the families I was meeting. I started interviewing therapists, finding resources. And one of the things I did, and I still love to do today, is to find a tool or a resource and see how it can be used in the context of a family who's where the parents are geographically apart. So, for example, the episode that she's come out on tapping, that's a tool. And it's like, okay, how can we use that tool with the emotions and the life that we are living when a partner is away? Another tool I developed in that time, which was really also out of my own life, was planting seeds. One of the books that was instrumental during those years was The Habits of Highly Effective People or Efficient People. I'll put the link in the show notes. And one of the things he says in that is the circle of concern and the circle of influence. So you're worried about a million things. That's your circle of concern. Your circle of influence is where you have impact. And he says the more you spend time in your circle of influence, the bigger it grows. And that, I think, is key if you are listening and you're looking to develop your own passions, interests, career. Start looking at where you have impact and spend time there. And it will grow, I promise you. The other thing that I kind of that came out of his book is to start with the end in mind. And with a globally mobile life, my reflection on that is that it's really hard to do because you don't know where you're going to be in 2 years' time or 3 years' time. My twist on that is that with skills, you can still start with the end in mind. What kind of skills do you want to develop? And that doesn't really change in terms of location. So thinking along those lines, and what I did really was that I actually said, okay, let's not start with the end in mind. Let's start with what we have. And I developed a framework called SEEDS, which is start with what you're doing. So this is for people who have left their jobs and are thinking maybe of restarting something and they're not quite sure what. And starting with the end in mind might not really work for them. So you start with what you're doing. Are you volunteering somewhere? Are you translating? Are you running a project? Are you helping your husband with things? Start with those. Then start exploring those. Is there something more you could be doing there? Is there anything you can expand on? Can you go a little bit further? And as you do that, and make sure it's temporary, right? We're not looking at a 10-year commitment unless you really have an idea that this is exactly what you want to be doing. As you keep exploring and expanding these projects that you're working on or that you already have an impact in and an interest in, right? Because you want to follow the bits that really attract your eye. Well, what are you feeling resonates with you and what you're doing? Then you start eliminating. You're like, okay, which ones are growing the fastest? Which ones are giving me the most positive feedback? Which ones do I find the most joy in? and everything else you cut. So you're pruning in a way. So seeds, S, start where you're at, E, expand that, E, eliminate, and D, you can start developing. Develop those major branches, if you will, and start growing them, reinforcing them, nurturing them, doing more and more. And the final S is strategize. Then you want to think about what training courses do you want to invest in? What mentors do you want to invest in? And I'm still investing in mentors now and strategizing. What's my 5-year plan? And a good book for that is High Performance Habits. And that is a great book. He helps you figure out, you know, your 5 big aims and how to get there. And by then, you're ready to strategize. So use the seeds. I'll put the framework in the show notes as well, if that is helpful. If you already know what you want to do or have a good idea of what you want to do, maybe it's a dream you've put on hold, then I have a workbook that will help you create a personal development plan. Something I realized during those years is that my husband has a manager. He has an employer. Every year they do their appraisal, their management by objectives, right? So he sits down, anybody who's employed sits down with their manager or supervisor every year, takes stock of their skills. You know, the manager finds out where they want to go in future, and then they maybe look at training. It took me a very long time to get me to the place where I'm investing money in my own training. I think we need to be our own managers if we're not employed. And say, okay, once a year, I'm taking stock of my skills. What am I want to build? What training do I want to invest? Go for it. Since 2019, I've invested in mentors. I've invested in being mentored by Amel Deraghi from Tandem Nomads. Go check out her website if you don't know her. I've written a book. I invested in training in writing coaching with Joe Parfit. Go check out her website if you don't know her. You may have different mentors, have a think. And it's been a journey. I've been sick since that time. We've moved house. But it's certainly developed faster than I thought it would. And now I work with parents whose partners work away from home. I provide one-on-one ongoing support and resources to help them manage the overwhelm, so that they can enjoy the growth this life can bring. I also work with organizations who send their staff on international assignments without their spouse and children. And I help the organizations support their employees and families who are living geographically apart. And the goal is to ensure that employees feel supported, remain focused on their assignment, and stay committed to the organization while having peace of mind knowing that their families are taken care of. To conclude really my story, I think the main points that I wanted to highlight are that this globally mobile lifestyle is complex, unpredictable. It brings a lot of intense emotions and change that needs navigating, transitions. And on top of that, if you have a partner who's traveling, a husband or a wife who's traveling, or way for work, that adds another layer. Please be aware of that. I always say that a normal level of self-care, whatever that is, whatever you see around you people doing for self-care and to manage their stress, is not going to cut it for you. Multiply it. Do much more to help you relax and de-stress than what you would if your partner wasn't traveling and if you weren't moving. Include yourself. You may have a different story from mine. You may be working full-time while your partner's traveling, which is, I think, incredibly difficult to maintain. You may be working part-time. You may already be working your dream job. If that's the case, please, please include yourself. I remember someone saying, I'm doing fine. I'm just get squeezed out. That isn't the point either to get squeezed out, because eventually your body will remind you that you got squeezed out. and you may develop resentment from it. Please, please include yourself. And if you are thinking or starting to create and carve out your own career, your own passions, I would also say think of it as a long game, because there's a lot of different things that are coming your way in terms of moves and having a partner who travels. You have to maybe be even more present for your children. Simon Sinek, one of my favorite quotes from him is that most people overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in a decade. Play the long game and see what you can build in 5 years or 10 years, rather than trying and getting discouraged that you can't cram it into a year. I had set out to build something in 10 years, and I'm astounded as that it went much faster than that. I'm still building. I'm still not where I want to be, but I think that's a good thing. It means that I still have something to work towards. But the impact that my work has had on people who are living it is much faster than what I would have thought. And I'm so grateful. So anything that you are passionate about, and if you want to have an impact, it might actually happen faster than what you think. And in terms of developing a passion and a career path for myself, that also has happened faster than I thought. And it's definitely helped for when moving as well, because I can just jump right in back into what I'm doing without really much disruption or, you know, trying to reinvent myself somewhere else. And having said that, something else really to point out is that every single person I've interviewed who is the stay-at-home partner, whether they work outside the home or not, but the holding the fort partner, doing something that they're passionate about, even if it's 5 minutes a day, has been life vital for them. So if you stop doing what you're passionate about, I would encourage you to find ways and be creative to reincorporate that in your life. And the last thing I would add is the intercultural aspect. If you are living abroad, if you're living in a relationship that's bicultural, or even if you're living in a relationship with someone from your own country, you might want to have a look at the differences of behavior, communicating. Explore that. It's worth it. It might solve some conflict that you may not have thought comes from there. That's all I wanted to say today. I hope that it's been encouraging to you. I encourage you, and I'm cheering you on to figure out your own career. Please share with me where you're at in the journey. And if you need some support and help, I am definitely here to help guide you. And I can help you figure out what you want to build. And if you are from an HR department, or you know an organization whose staff would benefit from this, then please let me know as well. Thank you for listening. And remember, wherever you are, wherever your partner is, you are not alone. I hope that you found this episode encouraging and that maybe you found ideas to apply in your own situation. Please leave me a review of what you found helpful, what you would like to hear about, and any other comments you would like to leave. This helps other people find this podcast, and it also gives me feedback. So it's very helpful. Thank you very much, and until next time.